The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 15, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Another beautiful day in Auburn, Alabama, and lots to get to on the show today. We've got a lot of college football to recap on the show today. We talked a lot about this yesterday, and it's crazy, in a two-hour window, we didn't get to half of what we needed to. It was pretty crazy with all of the results from this weekend. And I know it's only Tuesday, but I feel like for Auburn, since we were on the bye week, it's easier to kind of flip forward a little bit earlier in the week. And so definitely going to do that today. Also, college basketball things to talk about with SEC Media Day happening and pretty much wrapping up in Birmingham. Lots of notes from that as well. And so very excited to get into the show today. No Lindsey Crosby, no Baseball Power Hour this week with the Braves being out of the playoffs and limited Auburn baseball. There was some this weekend, but we're going to pick back up with him next week and kind of do our, I don't know, I guess our final Power Hour of the year since we're heading into baseball offseason. So Lindsey will pick back up with us next week on periodically throughout the offseason and then back with us in the month of March. But as always on Tuesday afternoons, we got the voice of the Lee Scott Warriors, Christian Griffin, in the studio with us. Good to see you 2 days in a row. This might be a record.
It might be. I know. I told you I was camping out by the office door. You let me back in again, and I'm let back in. No Baseball Power Hour, but I mean, we can go ahead and give the Baseball Power 30 seconds if we would really like to.
Sure.
NLCS tied 1-1. Mets even the series, winning that one in Los Angeles 7-3. Their next game is Wednesday night back in New York. And then the Guardians and the Yankees, New York won game one last night. Game two tonight at 6:38 p.m. And there we go. That's about what there is.
That's about it. Yep, that's about it. Yeah, lots to get to on the show today. Again, a lot of college football. We'll talk some college basketball as well. And with no guest on the show today, that means the phone lines are wide open. There's anything you want to talk about today, we want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. That's how you could call in, be a part of the show, and be on the line. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And I think we have to start with what happened in the Ohio State-Oregon game that we talked about a little bit yesterday. We were curious on if this was going to happen, and it is happening, the inevitable. The NCAA is now looking into what Dan Lanning in Oregon did late in the game on Saturday night, where they, what we now know, intentionally put an extra man on the field because Dan Lanning owned up to it, which there's debate on whether he should have done that or not. We'll get to that in a second. But bottom line is NCAA is looking into possibly a rule change, which I heard Ben Taylor say this earlier, could be now considered the Dan Lanning rule, where you cannot intentionally put an extra man on the field to stop the play, get the run off the whole nine yards.
And that's a crazy, there's still so much gray area with that, with you can't intentionally do it, then coaches are just going to turn it into, oh, we didn't know they were 12 men. Same thing with all of the injuries going on as soon as a drive picks up a couple first downs on the defensive side of the football. There's so much gray area, especially with Dan Lanning, whether or not he did intentionally do it or not, and then whether or not he should have said that he did it intentionally or not. It creates a whole buffer zone with just about everything, but it really makes me wonder. We talked about it yesterday with Auburn and like the coaching and how you have to put guys in just about every single possible scenario that you could be put in game. So that way, the very first time it happens, you're not sitting there, oh, shoot, what do I do? It feels like this is the very first time in college football, at least in such a big game like this, where that was the case, where you did have 10 or 12 guys on the defensive side of the football. You allowed the clock to continue to run, and it basically made it to where you took two plays and turned it into one with only 6 seconds remaining after that play. You took 4 seconds off. Why has there never been anything talked about that with how college football is now deciding on whether or not to, if there is a defensive penalty like that, to add the time back, right? Under 2 minutes, if there's an offensive hold or something, you have the 10-second reduction, which that makes sense. Or an offensive penalty, you take the 10 seconds off. Why, if a defensive penalty, if the offense is trying to go score, they mess up, the clock still continues to run.
Right.
Like, it feels like there's never been a game like that where something that they called a loophole, and for right now, I mean, Dan Lanning, if he did intentionally do it, is a genius for it, because you didn't allow a deep ball. You allowed their best receivers to be double covered, essentially, and turn the game into one play. But why has that never been talked about before?
We've seen so many different situations where something new happens and then a rule is created because of it, right? We heard Nick Saban cry for a long time when Gus Malzahn had no huddle going super, super quick. He cried about it, and he got his way. And, of course, the rules were changed then to slow down the game a little bit, allow substitutions and different things like that. We saw, was it a Pitt quarterback a couple of years ago?
The fake slide.
Where a homie was running down the field in stride, was about to get tackled one-on-one with either the corner or the safety. I can't remember which position it was. And the quarterback fake slid, juked the guy out of his shoes, and ran right around him and scored a touchdown off of it. Was that Kenny Pickett?
I was going to say, it's Kenny Pickett. And I'm trying to think. I think it was the ACC championship game.
It may have been.
Clemson.
I can't remember that. I'm pretty sure it was Kenny Pickett when he was at Pitt. And everybody thought it was the coolest play in the world because it looked so nasty when he did it. And he pulled it off live in a game. Yeah, come Monday afternoon. Monday morning, they changed the rule.
It was over Wake Forest.
Okay.
Yeah, and it turned it into where he was going to slide for about a 15-yard gain. And instead, it turned into a 55-yard rushing touchdown because the entire defense let up and he fake slid and then kept on running down the sideline and ended up scoring. We've also seen it a couple times to where you can't snap the ball, and I think that's a big reason why the 10-second runoff happened. But I remember a couple years ago in the Iron Bowl where after a review there was 1 second put on the clock, and as soon as the snap, or as soon as the referee blew the signal, the time started going.
Yeah.
So Auburn had their field goal unit lined up and made the field goal. Now you can't do that unless there's 2 seconds. And so,
right,
so many little rules that happen that I guess just seep through the cracks where it's like you feel like you have all of your bases covered, and then the actual football games go on and you're put in such a weird situation where something like that hasn't necessarily happened or been caused for a change by such a loud argument in a game like it was against Ohio State and Oregon.
But this one feels a little bit different because all of those plays, it was the opponent who was, you know, out in outcry and was calling for a change and all,
yeah,
that's unfair. Credit to Ohio State and Ryan Day. I have not seen anything where they've released a statement or Ryan Day had anything to say about it. And I could have missed it, so correct me if I'm wrong on this, somebody. But I have not heard a bunch of Ohio State people saying, that's not fair, he shouldn't have done that, he can't do that, we would have won, yada, yada, yada. I haven't seen a whole lot of that, and I feel like that's one of the major differences in this situation versus a lot of those that we just talked about, and I'm sure there's a bunch more that we've missed. That's what feels like it's different. It's like everybody in the country was watching this game, and everybody at the same time was like, oh, huh. Now, was that on purpose, or was that on accident, and they just happened to find it? Come to find out, Dan Lanning, after denying it initially, admitted it, believe that was today or late yesterday.
His Monday presser.
Yeah, okay, so it was yesterday, and he was like, yeah, we did that intentionally. We knew what we were doing. We knew how we could get away with it. And look, I'm all for playing by the rules, finding loopholes in the rules. If you shut it down, you shut it down. But I'm not going to punish a coach or a staff or a player for knowing the rule book better than the organization that runs them and taking advantage of that If it gets banned after that, okay, that's fine. Bill Belichick was the king of this during his coaching days at New England, where he would do something insanely weird. Nobody knew what he was doing. Oh, turns out he just found a loophole.
I remember there were times he would take 4 or 5 delay of game penalties on purpose to continue to let the clock run down because the team that was on defense didn't want to accept the penalty.
Right.
Because it was almost
it was a
fourth down, and well, they wanted to make it, you know, where you try to get the delay of game on purpose to back up the punter, give him a little bit more yardage. The defense didn't want it, so Belichick said, okay, fine, we'll let 2 minutes run off the clock here on a delay of game penalty that wasn't accepted. So he was definitely one of the genius guys to do it. I'm looking up right now. I haven't seen anything on the negative side from Ryan Day complaining about this or anything, because if you watch it in the game, he's the one losing his mind on the sideline, letting the head official know there's 12 men on the field. So he obviously, I don't want to say bought, you know, the trick or whatever, but it worked exactly how, if intentional, exactly how Dan Lanning wanted it to work, and props to him for being able to execute it and pull it off.
And maybe it did come down to one singular play, but Dan Lanning out-coached Ryan Day. I said it yesterday, he out-coached him. And in a game like that, where it's number 2 versus number 3, and it comes down to legitimately a single point, sometimes it takes a crazy play like that. Sometimes it takes thinking outside the box to win a football game, and that's exactly what Oregon did. And they win by a single point over Ohio State. It was technically an upset, 3-2, and now the NCAA is looking into it. And I'm sure there will be a decision made where you can't do that anymore. If I had to guess, the NCAA is going to say, nah, I don't think so.
What would you do if you were to, because you obviously can't say coaches can't intentionally do it, because then everything's going to be, oh, I didn't mean to put 12.
Well, that's the thing. How do you, as a human, you can't, as an official, I don't believe you can make that judgment call and as the white hat or whatever and say, oh, they had bad intentions. Right. They did it on you.
It's the same thing with all of the injuries right now. That's why nothing has truly been done, because you can't speculate on whether or not a player truly had an injury.
I think you can't tell me how I feel.
Right.
Is the way that I describe
exactly
that.
And
or how I was thinking.
There's been a lot of arguments with that side of things. I've even heard stuff saying that if a player gets injured on a drive, they have to sit out the rest of the drive.
I'm on it. I like that. Yeah.
They can't go back on the field until a change of possession. So that way you can't make it to where, I mean, if you want to, you can have two linemen go down in the same drive, but you're going to continue to do it. Or, you know, it changes it to where you have to try and get off the field if you aren't seriously hurt, or if you are seriously hurt, well, then you should be out for the remainder of the drive. Anyways, with a play like this, does it go to you can accept the penalty yards if you're the offense and the clock doesn't go off?
Something like that. I was talking with somebody yesterday about it, and this too many men on the field. This needs to be decided, and if you are one of the officials on the field, normally, especially on the defensive side, the back judge, that's your job, is to tell and to count whether you physically are pointing them out and counting on your fingers and toes, or you're keeping track of it and just have a mental image of how many guys 11 guys looks like, you need to have that decision made before the ball is snapped. And then what I was saying is, when the football is snapped and you know they have 12 men, as soon as that ball is snapped, the play has started, they have too many men, blow it dead. So right there.
So almost like a defensive false start. Or an offsides where you
lining
don't let the play
sides
go out.
Yeah.
So you blow it dead initially. So you don't even let the play happen to where you could reward the offense.
Nope.
And then you can take both.
Correct.
Almost like an offside.
I'm saying you stop it right then and there, because as soon as the ball is snapped, the defense has committed a penalty, and I think that should stop right there, because they committed a pre-snap penalty, but they're playing at an advantage, which is against the rules. So why are we going to let the play happen if they have a legitimate advantage, and then the play's not going to matter anyway, or it might matter, right? I mean, there's just too many changing variables for me here. I think on too many men on the field, offensively or defensively, one of the officials counts, right? Whoever keeps track of that. And as soon as you mentally say, oh, they got 12 men, All right. As soon as the ball was snapped, boom. Throw the flag, blow it dead, play's over. It's 5 yards one way, however you want to do the clock, and then you reset and you do it again.
Because it does happen on the offensive side of the football. If 12 guys break the huddle, they don't let them run the play.
Correct.
They blow it dead initially. With a play like that, though, I would love to see it almost play out how like an offense has an advantage on an offsides penalty, to where if you're Ohio State in a play like that and there's 12 men on the field and the play happens, say it's a 15-yard gain, say they get the first down, then you can take
them,
the play and reward the offense, or you take the penalty and add the time back.
And
rather than right now, to where you can take one or the other, but you don't get the time back.
And in that situation, it's almost like, oh, you got the play even at a disadvantage. We're going to reward you for that.
It's like offsides.
Yeah.
But you have the option under 2 minutes where you would have a 10-second runoff for the offense. You get the time added back if you don't accept the penalty. If you don't accept the play, you accept the penalty.
In a perfect world for me, that wouldn't exist.
No.
The offsides would not exist. The quote, free play in my world would not exist, because you're almost, I'm not going to say encouraging to have that, but it almost makes it okay. It devalues or de-escalates the penalty because, oh, they were offsides, but the play was cool. They got the first down, so we'll just give it to them and move on and forget about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I mean, the defense is still being penalized because they let up a big play. That would have been more than the yards, but I don't know. In a perfect world, I think if there's a pre-snap penalty like that, offsides, too many men, whatever the case may be, false start. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't false start and then let the defense bull rush him and come after the guy. Like, you blow it dead right there because the offense had an advantage. They blow it dead. I just think to clear a lot of this up, that's what would need to happen.
So you're saying just get rid of any play where the penalty should be thrown either before or at the snap, and get rid of any sort of play where you can finish out the play. Obviously not considering like a hold or anything like that,
where
the flag is during
the play.
But
yeah.
And offsides, no matter what, you snap it, you blow it dead immediately. No such thing as a free play anymore where the defense, but doesn't that penalize the offense for a hard count? I guess not necessarily because they get the 5 yards, but
you get the yards. Yeah. I mean, you're just not. Yeah. I would eliminate the quote free play.
Okay.
I think if you're looking to clear all this up, I think that would be a way to do it. Would it be weird? Yes, but change is weird. Change is different. And I just think it would clear a lot of that up.
Or worst case scenario, if we are looking at it, in a game like this, where you have the 2 minute in the second quarter and in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, the timeout.
That could be where it, well, not even the 2 minute timeout, but how under 2 minutes, if the offense commits a hold, that's a 10-second runoff. Almost don't allow it in that period of time.
Sure. Something like
to
that.
To where, or worst case scenario, regardless of what happens, the time gets added back onto the clock. Because right now, that loophole took 4 seconds off of Ohio State's drive. If that's the case, Will Howard slides with 5 seconds. Ohio State calls a timeout and has a 42-yard game-winning field goal with 3 seconds remaining on the clock. But right now, Oregon wins 32-31, and that's, as of right now, all we're going to know about it.
We've blown way past the break. We got to get to it here. 334-321-1390. Got a couple of texts that we're going to get to as well. We're off and running here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And as we continue this whole rules change conversation, because it's a lot of fun and it's very relevant because of what's been happening around college football. We were naming different examples, Christian, about where you've seen major rule changes happen after an uncommon play, right? And Eric texted in the previous segment. I want to give him a shout-out here. He says, remember when the Baltimore coach, Harbaugh, intentionally held on the final play?
Oh, like the entire team.
Everybody held on the final play,
yes.
And then the punter then took the safety.
Yeah, because then you either have to accept the penalty or you accept the points. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe they've made that where you can't do that
anymore. I believe so,
I could be wrong, But I believe they cannot do that anymore. That's why you now see quarterbacks take the shotgun snap and roll around for 4 seconds and then throw the ball as far as they can out of bounds just to kill 6 or 7 seconds. But yeah, again, something like that where nobody's ever truly thought about it before, but you put the defense in a position where you accept the points or you accept the penalty. And if you accept the penalty, he's going to do the exact same thing the next time. And right. So it just.
But I don't understand why people get so fired up and upset. Oh, that's not fair. They can't do that. They right. should have been punished. No. They took advantage of the rules that nobody else had found. They took advantage of a loophole that nobody else had yet figured out.
That's, I mean, that's why life, the word loophole was created,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's why finding, it's a thing.
Yeah.
If it gets banned after that, then it gets banned. That's one thing. But if you figure it out, again, I always think back to Bill Belichick, who most of the time he did things that were not against the rules. They were actually in the rule book. Nobody just knew it was there.
Yeah.
And that's a different example. But, I mean, I heard Doug and them talking about this earlier, but even when Gus Malzahn was at Auburn, like, he did a couple of things that got people all riled up, especially Nick Saban at Alabama.
Well, he did it in the Iron Bowl. We talked about a couple ones, but where you brought Oscar Chapman onto the field on third down, and you kept Bo on the field, so that way it was fourth down. Auburn didn't have to substitute. They go to bring their punter back, and then they have 12 men on the field.
Five-yard penalty, Auburn wins the Iron Bowl.
Because it was fourth and four. Yep. Auburn won the Iron Bowl. Yeah, it was.
Because Gus Malzahn out-coached Nick Saban in that particular moment.
Thank you.
In that particular moment, he out-coached him. Which, that's what that is. Nobody wants to say that, but that's coaching.
Yeah.
That's what that means. And so, credit to anybody that figures it out. And again, this whole conversation has stemmed from Dan Lanning and the play on Saturday night where the NCAA now investigating it, not for wrongdoing, just to more than likely get rid of this rule.
Yeah.
And not allow it or put some stimulation in there to where...
Probably trying to see how many times it's actually happened, too.
Stipulation.
Like in a,
not stimulation. Stipulation.
We can't do this again. We did it yesterday trying to find the best word.
No, I just misspoke. It was stipulation.
Okay, there we go.
There's a difference in stimulation and stipulation. Big, big difference here. We're going with the P, stipulation. And so, yeah, we'll just have to see how that all comes to... I'm trying to think, have there been any basketball ones like this where either NBA or college where something, some wacky play happened and then it was like, oh, we didn't know that could happen. And then they changed the rules. I don't know anything off the top of my head.
The Hack-a-Shack.
Oh, yeah. That's a huge one.
And now the transition take foul is another one.
That's also true. That was a big
Hack-a-Shack,
one, Hack-a-Shack,
now you can't just, you know, intentionally foul their worst free throw shooter as soon as they're making their way down the floor, and then now the transition take or the clear path foul.
Yeah.
Well, clear path is one thing. Transition take
that's
is
true. That's
a different
true.
One. But basically where, you know, if a guy has a one-on-one fast break following a steal, you just touch foul him so that way he can't get a free dunk. Now that's a free throw and possession.
Yep.
So little things like that where, again, teams used to take advantage of it, then the committee finally got together and was like, hey, we're going to make this change, and now you're seeing it less and less, and I think it's for the better of basketball because it makes it to where you actually are seeing more of a flow rather than, well, because nobody wants to give up 12 free points a game at the free throw line with 12 transition take free throws.
Yeah, and that's how sports work, man. They evolve. They adapt, and that's just how, I mean, when the rules were originally written way back when, they didn't think of all this stuff because it didn't exist. They weren't thinking that far ahead, and it's okay. Things like this happen. Changes happen every day, and that's just how sports go.
It's kind of, I mean, granted, this one was taken to a much bigger extreme, but think about the first team to put a baseball defensive shift on. Where it was
don't get me started.
But no, but you see what I'm saying? Like, other teams are sitting there like, you can't do this, but like, by no means did it say the second baseman has to line up in between first and second base. So they did all that, and then now, obviously, you have to put two on either side, so.
Yeah, and you get people wanting to ban it, and don't get me started. No, I've been doing this show for 2.5, almost 3 years, and that was one of the very first arguments I've ever made on the radio, is trying to ban the shift is completely wrong.
Well, it is.
I know. Disagree with it. I disagree. I think it's dumb. You're banning a strategy. Would you ban the full court press in basketball? It's the same thing. You're banning a strategy. Not today. Not today. No. We're going to talk some college football. We got college basketball as well, as the SEC Media Day was in Birmingham this afternoon. 30 minutes in to hour number one.
Are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes in to hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Christian Griffin in the studio with us as well. And we'll transition out of the rule-changing conversation because there's a lot more to discuss on the show today. And also, we have a text that I missed. Apologies about that. Let's see what this is. 334-784-1067 is the text box number. You can call us, 334-321-1390. It says, as a high school official, okay, all right, I know who this is. As a high school official, we have radios and we have everyone, including clock keepers, helping in terms of counting players. So they have a lot of people that are, it's not just one person's job.
Basically saying there's no way that Oregon doing what they did would have gone by a blind eye at all.
Somebody knew,
yeah,
including Ryan Day, that Oregon had too many players on the field, but as the rule is now, you let it play out, mm-hmm, and it's allowed. I'm saying if you want to get rid of all this confusion, bam, blow it dead right there. As soon as the play starts, you have too many men, you broke the rule, you have an advantage, 5 yards to the offense. There you go. That's my solution.
Simple,
just saying.
Simple game.
Sorry that I missed the text there, but appreciate that and getting some official input, literally.
No point. Yeah.
Yeah, did not mean for that, but that's okay. Yeah. Yeah, let's move into a little college basketball because SEC Media Day was today up in Birmingham. All of the SEC coaches were there, brought a couple of players with them. Bruce was looking sharp today. He was dressed up in a suit. Can't say the same for others, but we won't call them out in public. But man, this seems to be one of the most anticipated years ever for SEC basketball. SEC men's college basketball, and I think you can make an argument on the women's side too, but
yeah,
definitely on the men's side, this may be the most anticipated season ever because you not only do you add Texas and Oklahoma, who are really good basketball programs that are legitimate, consistent NCAA tournament teams, you have a season in the preseason where Kentucky was picked outside the top five in the preseason rankings. And as we talked all summer long, as we got closer and closer to the start of basketball season, it's the two teams in this state at number one and number two. Preseason, the voters said Bama 1, Auburn 2. You can make the argument it could be the other way around. If you asked 50,000 people in this state, they would probably tell you, or go somewhere outside of this state and say, hey, who's going to win the SEC, Auburn or Alabama? It would be right down the middle. I believe that.
I think the way the tournament ended last year would sway a little bit of things, but as we know, preseason rankings, when all you do is consider, you know, numbers of what last year's team did for both of those, it has no true recognition of what these two teams are capable of and what they've done in their offseason.
Mm-hmm. And so, in terms of Auburn, right, in terms of what Auburn has, what Auburn's bringing in, and what Auburn plans to put on the floor, I mean, the excitement just in this town for the fans in the state that wear the orange and blue, I mean, is this the most anticipated Auburn season we've ever seen?
Ooh. I mean, at least from what I can remember.
Granted, I mean, I think the Jabari Smith team was pretty hyped up. Rightfully so. I mean, you had Walker Kessler, who we didn't know he was going to be as good as he was.
Yeah.
Jabari Smith was a freshman, but didn't know he was going to be as good as he was. There was a lot of talent on that team. But the thing that's different with this team, and I think I said this yesterday, there's a lot of known commodities on this team.
It's one of the oldest rosters in college basketball.
Yeah.
And
you can't argue with that.
And I think that another reason that it plays into a factor of the most anticipated Auburn basketball year is just because of how last year ended, right? It's almost the mentality of this team should be better. So it's almost like a nervous excitement where they should be better, but we also know that the team across the state is supposed to be better too. So yeah. It just adds so much anticipation for everything, and that's why we've talked about the SEC being a top two conference in college basketball, top three, but I think top two conference in college basketball.
Behind who?
Ooh.
I think the Big East is.
I was
going
to say
that,
yeah. You know me, from top to bottom.
It's my favorite conference.
It's
in basketball, anyway.
Deservingly so. And much like just a tiny transition, real fast, for college football fans, as soon as the schedule came out, everybody circled October 12th, right? That was this past weekend. Some are circling October 19th because another big weekend, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Tennessee, other teams like that. But college basketball fans have already circled Saturday, December 14th as the most anticipated weekend of college basketball. Let me read you some of these games. All right, all of these times are still to be determined, obviously. NC State goes to Kansas. Creighton, number 15, goes to number 2, Alabama. Number 6, Gonzaga, plays number 3, UConn. 22, UCLA, plays number 10, Arizona. Xavier, who's not ranked, plays at Cincinnati, who's ranked 20th.
The Cincinnati rivals, baby.
That's what Louisville plays Kentucky.
Ooh.
Ole Miss plays Southern Miss. And then you scroll down a little bit further. 13 A&M plays 14th Purdue. Auburn plays Ohio State in Atlanta.
That's a nasty Ohio State team.
It is.
I'm just telling you, man.
Seton Hall plays Rutgers. I mean, slate
I had
is
not
just
seen that.
Absolutely amazing. It is the comparable for someone who's not as big in college basketball. This is the October 12th college football slate in college basketball.
You start looking at these coaches around the SEC. I'm just looking at the lineup that spoke earlier today up in Birmingham for the SEC Media Day. Just listen to some of these coaches, man, that are in the Southeastern Conference for college basketball. Lamont Paris, who's the reigning SEC Coach of the Year at South Carolina, Mike White at Georgia, Rick Barnes at Tennessee, Mark Pope at Kentucky, Bruce Pearl at Auburn, Todd Golden at Florida, everybody knows how I feel about him, Buzz Williams at Texas A&M, Nate Oates at Alabama, Porter Moser at Oklahoma, John Calipari at Arkansas, Rodney Terry at Texas after that whole debacle, but he proved himself very worthy and he deserved that job and I'm glad they gave it to him, yeah. And Chris Beard at Ole Miss. Like, talk about a stacked league in terms of just the head coaching power that has shown up in one day up there in Birmingham. There's so many coaches that have to speak. They're going through 6:15 tonight up there in Birmingham. I mean, think about those coaches. I mean, you're talking about some Hall of Famers that are in that class right now.
It makes it to where not only can you take a quote-unquote team off, I mean, just the coaches from itself, just knowing that every single game – your talent might not necessarily outmatch the other team, but you're going to have to outcoach every single game on your floor or on their floor every single night on a Tuesday and a Friday or Wednesday and Saturday, wherever those slates end up being. But, I mean, what an SEC gauntlet. And then looking at what Auburn has beforehand, again, that's why we've talked about it. This is the toughest schedule that Auburn will ever play.
I think Alabama's playing their toughest ever, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it is neck and neck.
Every SEC team is arguably playing the toughest schedule that they've played ever or in a very long time.
Oh,
simply
are you
because
talking conference or non-conference?
Both. But I'm saying every team, because they play in the SEC,
true,
are playing such a tough team, such a tough league now. Was it 8 or 9 SEC teams that made the tournament last year, and that was the most ever?
Probably 9. I can't remember off the top of my head. I was actually pulling up the current bracketology, which it's October, so it's tough to actually do that. But I'm going somewhere with this because I'm going to ask you a question in a second, but go ahead.
No, I'm just saying the fact that there's 9 teams that made the tournament last year from the SEC. I mean, you could make the argument right now that you could 12 or 13, at least as of right now. Again, it's October. Some of those teams will work themselves out. Some of the teams will work their way into the conversation. But just the fact that, I mean, any given Saturday with college football has quickly transitioned into the hardwood where it is any given night. I talked about it last night. There's no longer a team that you play on a Tuesday night at home that you can just circle because you head to Knoxville that Saturday. Like, there's no longer any game that you can do that. And so now health becomes just that much more important. It is just a crazy time. You counting how many teams are projected right now?
No, this is how many teams are in the top 25. 9 SEC teams are in the AP poll preseason top 25. But I'm glad you bring all that up, because that is my question, and we're opening this up to our listeners as well. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. You can shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. You already kind of answered it. How many teams? It's October. The season starts in less than a month. We're 2.5-3 weeks out. How many teams realistically can and will make the NCAA tournament from the Southeastern Conference? Because I can make an argument. I can make an argument that double-digit teams from this conference can make it, which is what you were saying just a minute ago. And it's easy to sit back and say, well, yeah, Jacob, there's more teams now. The numbers are in your favor because there's 16 teams from the SEC rather than 14. Fair. But that's not where my argument's coming from. My argument's coming from that I just told you 9 SEC teams made the preseason top 25, and there are 3 or 4 teams that I think could find themselves inside the preseason top 25.
There are, again, this is October, but there are 11 teams in the Southeastern Conference projected to make it to March. 11.
That's the current bracketology?
That is the current bracketology, with Missouri sitting as the first four as one of the 11 seeds. But Missouri, Alabama's a projected 1 seed, Florida 5, Texas a 6, Texas A&M a 4, Ole Miss a 6. Keep scrolling down. Mississippi State, a 9. And then on the other side of the bracket, Tennessee, a 5. Auburn, a 2. Arkansas, a 4. And I think that was 11. Yeah.
I didn't keep track.
But again, just the fact that it's not like there's that many SEC teams that are even projected to be a 12 or a 13 seed. You're sitting there looking up there with 1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, a 6 here, a 7 there. Like, it's teams that you expect to have the expectation for those programs to run the gauntlet in March and make it to play in early April.
The Southeastern Conference is one of the few conferences in America right now that I think have less teams projected to miss the tournament than make the tournament. Like, there are more teams projected to be in the tournament than not be in the tournament from the SEC. How many other conferences can say that?
And
two? If that,
yeah. And think about the teams that I didn't name that are not supposed to, quote unquote, not supposed to be in make it to the NCAA tournament. Georgia's one of them with Mike White. That's going to be a scary program in the future. They made it to the Final Four in the NIT, which, I mean, say with that what you will, but it's a very, very good coach and a very good, very good program. I know they have a bunch of guys that are coming in this past year and this upcoming year. Oklahoma is another team that you would say gets overlooked a little bit just because of the past couple years not being as solid. But when you think of Oklahoma, I think of plenty of guys. I mean, Trey Young kind of leads the way with that team, where
Trey,
you think
Young,
of that guy.
Buddy Hield.
Blake Griffin. Legitimate runs in the tournament. So, I mean, just that's two teams right there that aren't projected to make it to the NCAA tournament that you don't want to host on a Tuesday at your home floor. You don't want to go there on a Tuesday either.
I have a question, but I want to take our final break before. Actually, I'll pose it. I'm going to
practice
good radio here. Going to pose the question, take a break, and we answer it when we get back.
The cliffhanger.
Could we ever get to the point, and this is getting into the expansion conversation, because we've seen it in college football, we've heard it in college basketball, right, with 64, now 68 technically, and conversations of 128 teams, right?
Wild.
Could we ever get to the point before expansion happens that the SEC in basketball runs into the same problem it's running to in football, where good teams from the conference get left out because it's unfair? 334-321-1390. We'll take our final break in hour number one and answer that on the other side.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, and posed a question heading into break as we wrap up this hour, talking college basketball, and got a couple of people texting in, so definitely want to get to these. I posed the question in, what is this? Could we get to the point, if the NCAA tournament stays at the number that it is right now, 60, technically 68, right? Could we get to the point where the SEC conference in college basketball, we may already be here. Could we get to the point where it's so good, it's such a good conference, it's such a deep conference, that tournament-worthy teams from this conference get left out because it's, quote, unfair and there's not enough spots?
Yes. I think if you haven't already gotten there, because was it not last year, but it was 2 years ago that Mississippi State started off really slow, ended up being one of the better teams, and made a run in the SEC tournament before losing, and then they got left out. Was that 2 years ago?
Are you thinking of A&M?
That's what yes. Yes.
Yeah, you're thinking of A&M.
But again, that proves the point of everybody expected them to get in, and they ended up not making it, and you threw your arms up of, like, how? How did this team not make it to the NCAA tournament? You look at the preseason rankings right now with Mississippi State and Ole Miss at 9 and 10. I mean, those are two very, very good basketball programs that if they have a 500 preseason or a non-conference schedule and then kind of just get off to that slow start or even start hot and then kind of fade off, I mean, that could easily be a team that you wouldn't want to go face Ole Miss and Oxford if they're playing well with Chris Beard, but
no.
Because there's too many already in that you can't throw another SEC team in.
Well, a friend of the program, Ben Taylor, host of Auburn Opelika this morning over on News Talk WANI, he says, no, we will not get to that point because you have qualifiers in basketball that you don't have in football, such as KenPom and the net. And so what he's saying is there are stats and rankings to at least defend the decisions of the tournament committee. And not that I've been overly impressed with the NCAA tournament committee, but I am more than what we get from the college football playoff committee, because I feel like the tournament committee is not controlled by the television networks. Very well could be, and we just don't know it. But I get his point, right? I mean, you can at least compare this team's offensive rating to this team's defensive rating and the luck rating and the quad wins and all of that stuff that I love that college basketball has. And you and I talked about this yesterday. It's what makes the sport so good. I think it's why I like it so much, because it's a balance between football and baseball, which is crazy to think about. We don't use stats enough in football when deciding postseason participants, but in baseball, it's so easy to get trapped in the numbers and not think about, okay, who's just the better team here? I feel like college basketball is a healthy balance, which is why I love it so much. It's a balance of, let's see what the numbers say, but let's also watch the eye test and see how they look for 40 minutes each and night, every single night.
Oklahoma was the 44th ranked KenPom team. That was the number one team that did not make the tournament last year. Ole Miss was 47th, and they made it.
It's not a perfect science, I guess.
Which, granted, I know that's only three spots and you're looking at record and everything, but
sure.
It's
But my point is, and where I come from with this question, is look at the SEC. Again, you have 9 teams that are ranked in the top 25 preseason. You're telling me, let's just go down the list. I know we're about to get kicked out of here. Alabama, tournament team. Arkansas, yes. Auburn, yes. Florida, yes. Kentucky, yes. Texas, yes. Tennessee, yes. A&M, yes. That's 8 teams that I would, not that this means a whole lot, I would put the house on, right? 8 teams right now that I would confidently say are going to make the NCAA tournament from the SEC. What happens if 4 other teams are good? Here's where the SEC is going to get in trouble. They're going to eat themselves alive. They're going to beat each other up.
They're going to SEC West in college football.
That's exactly right.
That's where
exactly
no team
right.
can go 11-1 because there's what it was, where there were four or five great teams in the SEC West. If you were able to make it out at 9-3, you loved where you were at.
They're going to do what the Pac-12's been doing to itself for years. RIP, I think. They're trying to stay around. But
they'll be back.
Thanks, Gonzaga. They're gonna do exactly what they did, what the Pac-12 does, which is just beat each other, and they're gonna destroy each other's records, and nobody's gonna care enough to look into the resume. They're gonna say, "Oh, that team went 500 in the SEC. Nah, they're not good, but their wins were Tennessee and Alabama, and their losses were Texas and Auburn." Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just fear that's gonna happen, and. Everybody talks about this SEC bias, which is true, but how do you overcome the negative SEC bias? I think that's a real thing, man. And I think for the first time in a long time, we could see that play out in college basketball for the Southeastern Conference this season. Hour number one is in the books. College football, talking a little Auburn, coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you know where to find the podcast at this point, don't you? It's on our station website. That's on ESPNAU.com. You can check it out. Christian and I talked a lot of football with the rules, changes, conversations going on, right, Dan Lanning? Out-coaching, out-smarting Ryan Day on Saturday night. The NCAA now looking into that. So had a lot of fun talking about that. Kind of got in deep a little bit there. And then started talking some college basketball, which, yeah, I know. We're only six games into college football, but we just got in a really good 30 minutes of college basketball. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of that, you can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Coming up here in hour number two, going to talk some college football, talk some Auburn as well as they get prepared for Missouri going into the back half of the schedule. What are the expectations? What do we expect to see? What do we expect to hear? All of that type of stuff. We're going to have that for you here in hour number two. We're going to get to the phone lines in just a second. But before we do, before we get into content, I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here on ESPN during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour each and every day here during my show on ESPN. Phone lines are open all hour number two, 334-321-1390, and we begin hour number two with Terry. You're on the line.
Jacob, how you doing today?
Doing good, Terry. What's on your mind?
Jacob, coming out of the off week, do you yourself or anybody else expect any changes? Because God knows there needs to be some.
Well, it's funny you ask that because I didn't get a chance to go to the Hugh Freeze press conference on Monday. I just got wrapped up here at the office, but that was going to be my question was, okay, Hugh, out of the bye week, now that you're 2-4, my question was going to be, are we going to see any personnel changes? What I mean by that is, are we going to see some new names and new places? Like, and that's sort of the conversation Christian and I had a little bit yesterday was, look, this team's 2-4. What you're doing is not working. While we may not have gotten that answer in particular, Hugh Freeze did tell us that they're changing up how they're going about things from week to week, and this is obviously the first week of that, so we'll see if the changes lead to any better results. But I hope so, because if you don't, I don't think you can expect to win many more games, because you haven't won many games so far, Terry.
Well, Jacob, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
That's what they say. And so let me ask you this, Terry. What changes would you make?
Well, not specifically naming personnel, but if you're going to go with youth movement on the offensive line, at receiver, and everywhere else, why not go a quarterback?
I don't think
Auburn's going to get anywhere. Peyton Thorne, just sit him on the bench and keep him there. I mean, I've said it repetitively. They say he gives them the best chance to win. He also gives them the best chance to lose. And if the guy's thrown six interceptions, you got to pass three to get to six. Why did Hank Brown get another shot?
Yeah, and that's been a popular call, right, for a lot of fans is, and I know you've been one of them leading the charge, is, man, let's just go with the young quarterback. And Auburn's not going young across the board. I mean, Jarquez Hunter's not going anywhere and some of those types of guys. Now, I will say, you are starting to see that on the defensive side of the football. You're starting to see a lot of younger guys slowly get some more minutes on different positions. So we may get to that in just a second. And I think that's the decision Auburn has to make. It's like, look, do you want to keep Peyton Thorne, who realistically is supposed to give you the best chance to win, or do you just throw a young guy out there, let him struggle, let him grow, let him hopefully develop and get better and play for the future? I don't know what the best answer is, because, man, if you're Hugh Freeze, that keeps you up at night, because it's a win-win or a lose-lose situation. I mean,
I just don't see any point keeping a fifth-year senior who's not going to get any better, and they're not going to get any better with him. If they give them the best chance to win, how bad does that say that room is?
Yeah, and I think that conversation needed to be had weeks ago, because now you're 2-4, right? Now you're 2-4. There is no college football playoff. There is no SEC championship. There is no legitimate postseason. You're going to go play in some worthless bowl game. And so do you want to play for that, to try to play in Birmingham? Or do you want to try and make this team better?
Head to Birmingham?
Right. I mean, that's the conversation Auburn needs to have right now.
Exactly. And I don't see the point. If you're going to go youth, and clearly the future of this team is the youth, why not do it everywhere?
Yeah. And quarterback's the one that people are looking after, that's for sure.
And it's clear that he's not going to be. There's going to be a battle between Walker White and Deuce Knight next year. I think we all know that.
You don't think so?
No, I do think so. I do think that's going to happen.
Oh, okay. Okay, my bad. So you do think there's a quarterback battle next year?
Yeah, there'll be a battle next year for sure. No more Peyton Thorne, thank goodness. But because again, I'm being repetitive here, but the guys, we've seen what he can do, and he can't do anything. And this is not Terry's words. These are Hugh Freeze's words. He went out and got the guys to make him better, and he still didn't do it.
Just playing devil's advocate, Terry, would you say that Auburn's offense would look a lot better this year if they established more of a heavy running game?
Absolutely, because that's really the only strength they have.
So would
but
you, if that's the case,
that they can throw the ball vertically down the field, the offense is going to be a detriment, a problem.
And I don't disagree with you, but if that's going to be the case with turning Auburn football into more of a run-heavy team, would you want more of a running quarterback who's Peyton? Peyton has shown that he could do that, or do you want somebody like Hank Brown who's going to be much more of a pocket passer where you can sell out on the running back?
No, I'd much rather have Hank Brown throwing little 6 and 7 yard out patterns to the receivers.
That's fair.
And let him just dominate. Throw it successfully when you have to. His accuracy is good. When Peyton Thorne came to campus, all we heard was his accuracy was tremendous. His decision-making was good. They're terrible. His decision-making is terrible, and I don't know. How can anybody back him on accuracy? He's not accurate.
And I want to jump in on that, too, because that's the problem, is Auburn needs a genius back there playing quarterback right now. That's the bigger problem, I think, Terry, is not who's playing quarterback. It's the system they're playing in, which is I've been preaching that for weeks.
Eric, keep hearing Walker White's not ready. The guy has been there since January. Why is that? Why do we keep hearing that? Freshmen are being successful. I understand the argument, well, we don't want to ruin him, you know. Well, why is he not ready? Okay, so he knows 10 plays. Let him go in there and run those 10 plays. I don't understand. Yeah. I just can't fathom it. Oklahoma just walked here and beat us with a freshman quarterback.
Yes, they did.
And Tennessee is struggling right now, but it has one loss with a freshman quarterback, right? Am I right or wrong?
No, you're right.
And I just don't, they keep saying, well, he's not ready. Why is that always excuse at Auburn and it doesn't seem to be anywhere else? He's not ready.
I don't know if it's that he's not ready. I think it's more of there are other guys who are further along than him.
Well, we just said in our conversation here how bad that room is if Peyton Thorne gives you the best option to win, how bad that room is.
I think that's the point you should plant your flag on, Terry. I really do.
Yeah. Take care, guys. Y'all have a great day.
Thanks so much. You too, man. 334-321-1390. And I feel like I just continue to repeat myself on the system part of this conversation. But again, it takes a doctor to run the system that we're trying to do right now. And I think it has shown when the quarterback's not having to make 18 decisions pre-snap or receivers aren't having to run separate routes depending on what they're looking at across from them and things like that. It's like, man, just line up and run a play and see how it goes. Like, when we're not outsmarting ourselves and not trying to be smarter than the other guys, at what point, this is crazy to say. It is, and I'm going to preface it right now. It's crazy to say this. It may not matter who plays quarterback for Auburn. Because there's enough guys around them to be successful. That's what Hugh Freeze told us, right? That's what Terry just said, is there are enough guys around him, whoever that dude is. I've said this before. I don't care if it's Hugh Freeze. It's pretty simple. Have one or two reads, turn around and hand the football off. That's it. That's your job. And this whole RPO thing that we've been trying to do has got to go. Nobody can run it.
No, and if it's, again, regardless of who the quarterback is, it either needs to be PPO with pass-pass option or run-run option. And
a run-only option,
If it's Peyton Thorne who is in the shotgun, let it be your one read for that play is that defensive end right there. If he goes after you, hand the ball to 27. If he goes after 27, keep the ball and get 6 yards.
Yeah.
And then do it again. And then do it again. And then every once in a while, if we need to on first down, run something different. Simple game.
Simple game, man. Simple game. And so that does get it. And Terry, we do appreciate the call. And phone lines are open in the second hour, 334-321-1390. It gets us into what are we going to see this Saturday. 11 a.m. kick in Como. That's official, right? 11 a.m. I've always said, and it's a popular saying, but I believe it, I think the road team benefits from an early kickoff on the road.
100%.
I just truly believe that. I talked to Eugene Asante yesterday. He said, man, we're ready to get in there. And I asked him, man, how do you personally feel about it? And he said, and to give you a little sneak peek of what will be coming up on the drive tomorrow, he said, I love it. He said, man, we get in the hotel, we get up, we get in there, and we're ready to go in and handle business and go home. Like, not get in and get out and just see what happens. He said, no, we're ready to go in there and handle business. And we like playing early games on the road.
And think about it, too, with everything kind of lining up to where it should benefit Auburn as much as it can, because they're coming back from Massachusetts, playing a game where they walked into a middle school locker room. And if you're looking at it, you're asking the question, what should Auburn see? If there is any sort of any brain matter in the program, you'd look at what Texas A&M did to Missouri. They ran the ball 36 times for 236 yards and 5 rushing touchdowns.
So what should Auburn do on Saturday?
I think...
RPO?
I think it should just be straight dropbacks and go routes.
I like it.
That would make the most sense.
Four verticals?
Yes, and then screens on third and 13.
I love it. I think that could work. I think it could work. It didn't work the first four losses, but you know what? This day's going to be different.
It's going to be different. It's because we're on the road this time.
Oh. Everybody's focused.
Right.
Everybody's having fun.
Yeah.
Got you.
Dark horse.
In seriousness, though, you're right. Look, A&M laid out the perfect game plan to beat Missouri. And preseason, we looked at this game and we said, oh boy, a road game, middle of October, at what is probably going to be a top 10, top 15 Missouri team. They have not played like that all season long. That Missouri team has not played like a top 20 team this entire season. And correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, they beat Murray State and Buffalo. Cool. Okay. that they're terrible. Those are two basketball schools. Then you beat Boston College, who at the time looked like a good win. Boston College is mid. They're terrible.
But Boston College did, if you're not taking the take the Texas A&M execution, but take the Boston College mentality and the approach that they had to that game, where well, I guess it didn't necessarily work in this game because they didn't really move the ball at all. But the way that they had it against Florida State, where you just dominated the time of possession by keeping the ball on the ground, I mean, that's what you would love to see Auburn do, because Missouri's offense has looked very solid all year. I don't feel like that's the worst thing to say.
They put up 27, other than A&M.
Yeah. Right, but and then I mean, Vandy, you still put up 30 points, which has turned out to be a little bit better of a win than what it looked like. But, I mean, Brady Cook and that wide receiver unit, that's going to be what they rely on. So let your offense be your best defense. Keep those guys off the field.
But other than Georgia, and I still think the argument could be made, tell me where the defense for Auburn has not done their job. Tell me where the defense in a game for Auburn has not given them a chance to win the football game, which is what I said at the very beginning of the year was going to be the case. It's all about Auburn's offense. If you can keep the football in your possession, take up chunk yards, long time of possession, and score, right? Score, because Auburn has had a horrible problem this year with scoring. You do that and you're going to win some games. I firmly believe that.
If you could bring in the mentality and the approach that you brought for the Oklahoma game, where you had the ball on offense for 35 minutes to their 24.
Yep.
Again, you're one mistake and a couple play calls and a couple coaching decisions away from when you're up by double digits, making it where you're up by 17. But then all of a sudden you stall. The offense can't get it done, and then the offense makes one mistake and it turns into a difference maker. If you can bring that mentality and that sort of mindset to this type of game, you can walk away at 2:30 with your third win of the season.
And I'll say this too before we get to break, got a really good text we're going to get to when we come back. A&M jumped on Missouri early and never let up. They scored on their very first possession of the game. Missouri took the football first, went for it on fourth down after a five-play drive, didn't get it, and A&M took the football and scored and never looked back. Listen to these drives that A&M had. Are you ready for this? And this is in sequential, yes, order. Touchdown, field goal, touchdown, touchdown. They scored four straight times before they punted at the end of the half. They came back and scored a touchdown, field goal, punt, touchdown, punt, end of game. They punted three times and scored on every other possession. That's how A&M beat Missouri 41-10.
And it shows, I mean, it truly shows how close this Auburn team can be, because Missouri's only a touchdown favorite.
Gone down.
It has.
That line's at like 4.5 now.
Is it?
That's what I heard earlier.
It is. No, you're right. It opened at 7. It is sitting at 4.5 now.
People are all over Auburn in this game.
Which is, again, it shows that you're right there. Just put the guys in the right position to win. And it sounds crazy to say, because I say it all the time here, but make the simple game a simple game.
We're going to get to a really good text about Hugh Freeze's offensive system when we come back. 334-321-1390. That is the phone line number, and the text box number is 334-784-1067. Addressing what could be a doozy when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We dive into the On the Line text box here on ESPN, 334-784-1067. And the question is this. Talking about Hugh Freeze's offensive system, his game plan, right? Says, is this system the same one that Bo Wallace ran at Ole Miss, that Malik Willis ran at Liberty? Was their football IQ that much higher than Peyton Thorne and Hank Brown. And the follow-up to that was, when did Freeze's system get so complicated? And my answer is, it's the same style. Yeah, it's the same type of offense because, A, it looks similar, and B, Hugh Freeze has straight up told us he's not changing his ways. He's not changing who he is as an offensive-minded guy, as a play caller, as a schemer. Now, different coordinators relate, and I guess lead to different nicks, right, and different things like that in the offense. But as a whole, yeah, it's the same style. Now, there were different quarterbacks. Bo Wallace and Malik Willis are two different cats, okay? They're two different guys. Because you start looking at the stats with what Malik Willis did at Liberty, they ran all over the place because he was a dual threat, legitimately. But guys like Bo Wallace at Ole Miss, all they did was make the right read. Bo Wallace wasn't in New York. Bo Wallace wasn't winning Heismans and doing crazy acrobatic throws and sidearms and no looks. He was just making the right reads. And he had enough of a rushing attack. I was just looking at it while Hugh Freeze with that Ole Miss. I would say they averaged, what I read them off to you, Christian, about 150, 160 rushing yards a game as a team. It's not great, but good enough. And that's what Bo Wallace was able to do. Guys like him could make the right decision.
Auburn averages 165.5 rushing yards per game right now, this year, which, I mean, is not...
Could be more.
...a crazy number. They average net passing, which includes sacks and everything, 279 yards per game. It goes back to, I mean, the same thing that we've talked about through 6 and 7 weeks of the season now. If you could cut the turnovers in half, where would this team be?
How many points a game is Auburn averaging right now offensively? Do you know that? Or just, I mean, you can just look at it really quickly. Because I'll tell you what they did for Ole Miss when Hugh Freeze
this
was there.
I mean, this is a very, very skewed number.
Oh, because of the SEC play.
Okay. Well, give me just a second.
Okay.
Because right now they're averaging 30 points a game.
That's not true. Yeah. I forgot about the 70-something performance. Yeah, I forgot about that. And these numbers will be skewed as well. I wish I could find what Ole Miss did in the SEC when Hugh Freeze was there in terms of their offensive scoring. But some of these, I mean, 31 points per game, 30 points per game, 30 points per game, okay, 40 points per game. Auburn and SEC play averaging 16 points per game right now. I mean, I go back to Auburn has a scoring problem, but it's the same system.
It turns into 15 and a half points against Power Four if you add the Cal, where you had 14.
Oh, okay. Well,
so even lower.
Even lower. Great. It's the same system because Hugh Freeze, as much as we like him, has flat out told you and me and everybody that covers this program and is a fan of this team, he's told you he's not going to change. And his system, he believes it works. And he has proven that it works at other places. He has proven that it can work with the right guys in the system, with the right dudes in the room. And apparently, with the right quarterback leading the way. Bo Wallace was a guy. Malik Willis was a guy. There's others, too. I mean, those are the common ones we use because for years I just scratched my brain and said, how in the world was Bo Wallace made into a legitimate quarterback that was beating number one teams in the country?
With throws off of defenders' helmets?
Yeah, I mean, crazy stuff like that. But he had a couple of dudes around him.
Yeah.
And Ole Miss could outscore just about anybody, which is why they could beat teams like Alabama. So is it really, right? Because this goes back to the whole transfer portal quarterback lack of not adding somebody. Is Auburn truly a quarterback away? Is Deuce Knight the answer? Is a transfer portal quarterback an answer? Like, everybody's really starting to wonder that right now. I mean, think about what Terry's call said and what he had to say. I mean, man, everybody wants something different. Everybody wants to see a different guy. But how different would it be if Diego Pavia was running this thing?
I was going to say, not even Cam Ward, but if you took somebody
yeah,
like a Cam Ward or like Kyle McCord that's now at Syracuse, you throw him into this system, what is Auburn's record through the bye week?
5-1. Possibly 6-0. Think about that. Think about that. Because Auburn, I feel, if you had a better quarterback, would have more catches, less interceptions, probably more rushes, and just flat out more points. And at the end of the day, Auburn would just be a better team. And that's what is so frustrating about this whole thing. And the guy who texted about the system question says, I'll take a, quote, game manager that just didn't turn it over anything. And I agree. I mean, man, give me somebody that isn't going to throw a touchdown, but's not going to throw an interception, but will make the right decision, get you down the field, and then turn and hand it to the best running back in the SEC.
It goes back to what we said the entire preseason, the entire spring months, where if you got a B or a B-plus quarterback, regardless of who, or B-plus play out of the quarterback position, 8-4 would be the floor for your team. And I still don't think that that's not the case. I think if there was a B-tiered quarterback, which you find the name from the transfer portal or whoever, or even if Peyton did decide to play at that B or a B-plus tier, I think you look at everything so, so differently.
Got a text, too. I know we're about to get to our bottom of the hour break. Somebody texted in, 334-784-1067. That's the on-the-line text box. They said, stop substituting after every play. Not going to wear out a defense like that. It's fair. It's a fair point. I haven't thought about it that deeply, but I think there's a point to be made there.
You got to get back-to-back first downs to...
And that's the thing, too. I mean, how long have we dealt with that with Auburn? Get a big stop, 3-and-out. Nope, turnover, interception. I mean, it's just...
Or first down, and then essentially what feels like a 3-and-out.
Right, because then you just go 1-2-3, and you punt it away anyway.
Yeah.
Even after picking up 2nd and 3rd and longs, man, they do the same thing over and over and over again. All right, we got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Talking more football, basketball, whatever else is on your mind. We got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins. On ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Christian Griffin in the studio with us as well. And phone lines and text box all wide open, man. We're having a lot of fun on a Tuesday afternoon. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. If you want to call in and talk to us on the air, or you can just shoot us a text. Had a lot of those today. 334-784-1067. And tomorrow, we will be flipping the page, right? That's what we do on Wednesdays. We flip the page. We start looking ahead to what's coming up this weekend in college football. But Christian, I want to go a different direction, because now that every team, I think, has had at least one bye week in the SEC, we're right around that halfway point, right? We're at that halfway point of the SEC season. It's been wild. It's been crazy. And so my question is, and again, this is open to anybody here, what have we learned about the SEC? What have we learned about particular teams, particular players, specific coaches? And we'll get to Auburn too, but just in general around the SEC, what have we learned in the first half of the season?
I think it's shown that, you know, we always talk about the any Saturday or any given Saturday mentality that you have to have, where anybody can beat anybody. I think it shows this year in the SEC, Texas hasn't done it yet, but it shows that any team is beatable. It shows that the teams that we've seen over the past couple of years go 13-14-0 or 15-1, they are able to be beaten if they do not play A-plus football week in and week out.
I think that's fair. Yeah, and in terms of, I guess, the SEC not even as a whole, but just looking around different teams. I mean, just look at the teams that are on Auburn's schedule, right? We got into this a little bit yesterday, but think about the teams that Auburn has played already and the ones that are coming up. I mean, are we impressed with what Oklahoma has put out on the field? No. Now, we know they're played with injuries, which doesn't help, and they are playing a freshman quarterback, but we've learned that that may end up coming back, it may already have, come back to bite Auburn as maybe not such a great loss. I know it wasn't great in terms of how it went down, but just on paper, I mean, Oklahoma's not going to be a top 25 team by the end of this season. You remember their schedule they're playing? Yeah, they're going to be a 500 football team. Arkansas, I think we've realized they have more talent than we gave them credit for. And the fact that they kept Sam Pittman as their head coach looks to be the right move, which I was wrong. I mean, I totally said, why in the world are you keeping this guy?
I think both of us talked. We played the game of, despite how many wins they were going to get, we should play how many weeks Sam Pittman will be the head coach
in
Arkansas.
And we're going to lose that battle. We're going to lose that game immediately because Arkansas is such a unique specimen this year in college football. What a huge opportunity they have this weekend with number eight, top 10 LSU coming to Fayetteville. God, if I had the money or the time or the energy, I would drive to Fayetteville for that. I got some buddies over there. That would be an unbelievable trip. But they are one of the specimens right now in college football where they should be 6-0. They should be 6-0. And they have a win over top 5 Tennessee. Top 5 Tennessee, which may or may not look great. We're going to get to the Vols in just a second, but a win's a win. And if you don't, you know, shoot yourself in the foot against Oklahoma State, you win that game. And what appears to be, and I hate using this term, but what appears to be a pretty good loss against Texas A&M, who sits atop of the SEC standings. Who in the world had that? Who had that predicted before the year?
Arkansas was projected 4.5 wins this season.
And they're at 4 right now.
They're sitting at 4-2.
And with Louisiana Tech still on the schedule. So, got that.
I was going to say, anybody that took the over on the Hogs is definitely liking that. And, yeah, again, I think the Aggies and Mike Elko, I think that's been the biggest surprise of the season so far, especially following how they looked against Notre Dame at home in week one.
Where everybody wrote them off.
And then, exactly, yeah, they went under the radar, completely flew under the radar until about the Missouri game, I would say, and then absolutely dominated Missouri, and ever since then have really figured things out.
With the dominating win over Missouri, but I think there's also something that is looped into that as well. I think A&M could have still flown under the radar. Yes, if they didn't dominate Missouri the way they did, but I also think they are now in the light because, in the spotlight, if you will, because of what's happening around them in the SEC or below them in the SEC. Like, everything is pure chaos. And there's Texas A&M just cruising right along, their thing, not yet in the thick of it. And it's really hard to sit at the top for too long before people start to notice where you are.
Well, and it feels like, again, we talked about it yesterday, we can't just laugh and point at Jimbo Fisher since he's not there anymore.
And but that's how kinda, many millions?
Kind of been what the conversation has been, where A&M would start 5-1, 6-1, and oh, they have everything figured out. They're 6-1, and then all of a sudden they struggle getting 8 wins on the back half of their season. The schedule
plays really nicely.
It really does. I mean, you have
really nicely. Wow, I'm looking at it right now.
You have Mississippi State this weekend on the road. You host LSU, you go to South Carolina, New Mexico State, you travel to Auburn, and then you host Texas, which we talked about yesterday as what could be if everything continues to line itself up as the biggest college football game in a decade just because of what those two teams, how they haven't played in 13 years. But, I mean, unless they pull a classic Texas A&M, you give them the win over Mississippi State, you give them the win over New Mexico State. That already puts you at 8 wins, and then anything other than that puts you in a pretty good spot for a pretty solid bowl, and all of a sudden, if you find yourself at 10-2, you have a legitimate argument for a playoff spot.
Which I know you just said this, but it's not fair to give A&M the bad rap for blowing it down the stretch because Jimbo's not there anymore, and I think that was more of a Jimbo thing than A&M, but we just stamped it on Texas A&M because of Jimbo Fisher. So, yeah, that schedule, man. I mean, they have an opportunity next weekend against LSU, who I'm still not sold on. Is that crazy? Andy, we're going to get to you in just a second, brother. I see you over there. Is it not crazy? Is it crazy for me to say that as we're talking about things that we've learned halfway through this SEC season, 334-321-1390? Is it crazy to say that I'm still not sold on LSU, even after the win they got this past weekend, even with what they've done so far? Like, I think the win for LSU over Ole Miss says more about how fake Ole Miss is than how good LSU is.
I think that's what makes LSU so scary, and that's why we kind of put them in that spot of this could be one of those teams that makes the playoff somehow, some way, because you just don't know what you're going to get. And that's almost like a week in, week out thing where that team could look absolutely amazing and then the very next week look like they have never played football together.
And in the vice versa, the teams that they play could look terrible the week before,
right,
and then they look great the week that they play them, right? When you have one team playing their best and one team playing their worst. I mean, that seems to be more of a thing now than it's ever been in college football. I'll say this about LSU. At Arkansas, at A&M, home for Alabama. We're going to learn exactly what that LSU team is in the next 3 weeks.
You're going to learn a lot about them this weekend. After a big win at home, you get to go on the road
to Fayetteville.
You're going to learn a lot about that team
night
this weekend.
Game where they're calling the Hogs? Oh, goodness gracious. Get me out of there. 334-321-1390. Andy, you're on the line, my man. How are you?
Good. Where are you? Hey, I always have my point or two, and then I listen to you, and my brain goes wild. So you're dead on with LSU. I mean, that's the same with a lot of teams. And it's kind of like any team that plays Missouri. It's like, I don't know if they're going to do good or bad. I don't know if Missouri is going to do good. I know Auburn is probably going to shoot themselves in the foot because that's what we've done this year. Do you agree? And I don't listen to other, you know, I listen to McElroy in the morning and stuff when I can, but I don't listen to other colleges. I'm sure they're just as biased as we are. But you admit that we're a very biased fan base, right?
The Auburn fan base? Yes.
I mean, think we're going to win 9 games this year. And
that's just us not learning from past mistakes, Andy.
yeah, we're way past the shame on you, shame on me. I mean, we're on shame on me times 9. But, you know, Hank Brown had a good game against a very terrible team, and we're calling him the baby goat. I mean, it's almost sad how we are, and I include myself in this.
Delusion,
I know
hurts.
You always have reservations and always say, even before the season started, you're like, hey, but if it's worst case scenario, and I was like, nah, man, we're going to be good. two things about LSU. Did you hear the songs they were playing that night?
What, against Ole Miss?
Yeah.
I didn't, but I'm sure it's what they've always done, which they're typically not friendly and child clean.
So that's they've been doing that for 10 years?
Oh, yeah. LSU's always done.
Okay. I know they get rowdy, but, I mean, that's like high school.
Oh, no, they don't care.
I mean, I was a party animal in college, but I would have had to turn my head to that stuff. That's...
Just don't listen to Neck by LSU when the wife and kids are around.
Good Lord, man. Just seeing 18-year-old girls singing that stuff was kind of cringy. And then lastly, again, if any other school, you know, I like I said, I bet on South Carolina against Alabama, and I was nervous as heck, but I knew South Carolina had two defensive ends that were good. I can't believe it was that close at home. But if any school was going to Missouri, I would be flipping a coin. But with Auburn, I just can't see it happening because we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot. Just remember, if any of y'all think we're going to beat Missouri, and I hope we do. But if you think we're going to meet Missouri, just remember one thing. We could not beat Oklahoma with the 18-year-old quarterback and every single receiver out of the game. We couldn't beat that team where the next team that played them, they didn't even let them score. So we are that bad. Just don't get your hopes up this Saturday. It's 11 o'clock. I doubt we'll even be up. All right, War Eagle.
Thanks so much for the call, Andy. 334 334- 321-1390. And I'll say this before we get to break because I want to address this. The way that he's talking, I think the way he feels is how a lot of fans feel. Not to that extreme, but the Auburn fan base is on the verge of completely checking out. Right? I had somebody text me today and say, man, it's the middle of the football season. You guys talked about basketball for 30 minutes. Not complaining, just showing on where we are, right? Showing on where the Auburn fan base is SEC Media Day was today and college basketball starts in less than 3 weeks. Somebody said this the other day. It may have been you, may have been another show, may have been, I can't remember, so apologies who I'm failing to give credit to here. But this Missouri game could be it for Auburn fans in 2024. Could be it. Because you're coming out of the bye week, Hugh Freeze is talking big, everything is set up for this team to make that, quote, turn that we're looking for because they've been so close. But if it doesn't happen this weekend, then this team will have given Auburn nothing to be excited about, nothing to look forward to on Saturdays, and when they return home in November, it's going to be bare bones inside of Jordan-Hare. And I hate to put that much on a game like this Saturday, and again, tomorrow is all about turning the page to that game in particular, but just hearing from a lot of fans throughout these first couple of days, I think that's what's riding on this game on Saturday. I really do.
Do you mean that as the final score depends on that, or if Auburn goes out and loses a 35-31, but they rush for 280 and answer the question marks that we've had and just lose a shootout, does that change anything, or is it strictly you have to come back with a win?
I think since you're 2-4, since we're halfway through the season, that needed to happen last week.
Yeah.
Or against Georgia, last game.
Even before then, you could say.
Even before then. That would have been okay. That was acceptable against Oklahoma.
That was what we talked about. Where yeah. If we were asking, I posed the question of, yeah, would you feel better with Auburn losing a shootout or winning an ugly game? And everybody was saying, you know, we would take the ugly win, but the offense, I mean, we have to look decent moving the football. And yeah, so I would agree with you. I think we're past the point of,
oh, wow, we did the right things. We just came up short.
The classic, look, they showed up and actually looked pretty good today.
We're past that. Auburn fans are past that. 2-4, you can't, like, that room and that margin of error and forgiveness is gone. The fan base has given up on that. In this season, Saturday comes down to a win and loss, which, isn't that what every Saturday's about?
It does. It's just, it puts you in such a weird spot, because what if Auburn wins in a 17-14 game where
a win's a win?
It is, but you would feel weird because you feel like you'd even have more question marks than answers following the bye week.
Oh, if they win and it's the same thing.
It's a 17-14 game and we have four turnovers. They just happen to have three and we kick one more field goal.
But again, it goes to the point of this team figuring out how to win a game like that. And I think I think a win like that and the fact that you win the game would trump the bad performance, because then
for sure,
you could learn
how to be able to say, sorry not to cut you off, but it would be, yeah, if you correct these two things, you played that bad and still walked away with a win.
The problem is you're having to say you played that bad and you lost, or you played pretty okay and you lost.
Or you played good enough to win, you just didn't.
All the results have led to, but you lost. We'll take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll come back and wrap it all up on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Let's get to the phone lines one more time really quickly here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. Mike, you're on the line, man. I got about a minute for you.
All right. Don't know if you guys are Auburn grads.
Yep.
I am.
Both of us are.
My family are. Do you guys hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I was saying, I hope you're Auburn grads. If you're not, then I would understand if you don't know this. But the Auburn Creed, there's a line in there that says, I believe in Auburn. And love it.
And love it. Yep.
Well, Auburn fans, and I use air quotes on that, too many of them either never read the Auburn Creed or don't believe in the Auburn Creed, but instead act like five-year-olds who get spoiled and throw a tantrum when they don't get what they want. And their expectation is, I want what I want, and I want them to win every game that I expect them to win, and I expect an offense to run a certain way, and I don't think this is the right call. And I sit beside those fans at the game. I hear people call on shows like this and talk about that. But how about, what about if you're married, if you treated your wife the way you treated Auburn football? If you're married, you probably wouldn't be married long. So I'd recommend that we kind of stop and relook. Do we believe in Auburn and love it? And if so, maybe we start acting like it. Thanks, fellas.
Appreciate the call, man. 334-321-1390. Yes, we are both Auburn grads, proudly so. And that's the type of call that I like to hear. It's refreshing. It's different because, unfortunately, that is a slimmer part of the fan base who is willing to wait, who is willing to sit back and say, let's trust the process, right, and see how this is going to go. And when we're good, we're good. And when we get there, we get there, right? Asking from the backseat, are we there yet, doesn't get you there any faster. And that seems to be the type of fan that Mike is, and I do believe that those fans are out there. But what I will preface that with, or I guess back that up and say, fans that demand more are not in the wrong. I think both things can be true. Both types of fans can exist. And not, sports are a wild thing, man. Fans are crazy. Short for fanatic. They're crazy. You're never going to get a whole fan base, whether it's a college team, pro team. I don't care if it's the T-ball team. Every fan will not be on the same page. Ever. And I think we have to understand that.
And so much of it goes with comparison, right? You're looking at all of the other teams that either overachieved or underachieved, and you always play the comparison game of how is our team compared to this team. And unfortunately, over the past while, it went from Alabama and now it's Georgia, who appears to be on the top of everything, where it makes it harder to sit there and trust. You hear all about the transfer portal and NIL and how you don't need 3 years anymore. You can go and you can build a championship program in year one as a head coach. And while that can be true, having that side of the mentality is also, like what you were saying, it's needed, where you don't hear it often, but maybe two sides can be right at the same time.
We appreciate the call, man. Getting there at the buzzer. That's it for the Tuesday edition of On the Line. If you missed any of it today, check it out on our website, espnau.com. Christian, always appreciate you being in the studio. You're back on Friday here with us. Uncle T-Bone will be back on Friday. But I'm back tomorrow as we'll talk to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 and Daryl Dappert's Double D will join us from Locked On Auburn. He's on the air with us tomorrow as well. Shout out the Orthopedic Clinic for sponsoring hour number two. I'm back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. For Christian Griffin, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.